Hello there. We'd like to welcome you to the virtual kitchen table. We're Erin from Everlearning, Ashley from Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shelves, and myself, Hayley from Taking a Kinder Path. We're gathering for conversations about family life and home education, particularly unschooling, which is sometimes known as self-directed learning, or as I like to call it, natural learning. We'll be sharing our experiences and ideas, learning as we go. We hope you'll pull a chair up to the table and join us.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the virtual kitchen table. It's Hayley today, and I'm super excited to be opening the episode. Normally, you have Erin doing this, and she does such a good job that I'm a little bit nervous about stepping into those shoes. But I am super excited to be back with you two, Erin and Ashley. Hello, how are you doing?
Hi, Hayley.
Hiya.
Hi, I'm good. It's nice to see you again.
Yes, it is. It's great. So the reason that I'm starting the show today is because I really wanted to be the one to say hello to Alice. Alice Griffin is with us today. It's really nice to see you.
Hi there to all of you. It's lovely to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, we're really pleased that you came on to talk to us today, Alice. Thank you. So I discovered your writing, Alice, a few years ago now. I think you were guest posting on Ross Mountney's blog, and I loved your writing so much that I went to look up your blog and I joined your newsletter. And I think I must have replied to one of your newsletters sometime. And I think we discovered that we grew up not that far from each other here in the UK. Which was really nice. And more recently, you've become my yoga instructor, which is which is really cool. And I've done a few of your nature courses as well, which are really lovely. And we will link to those in the show notes. And I'm sure they'll come up as well during the conversation. But today we're talking about home ed on the move, on the road, on the water, however you like to travel. And Alice, you're a perfect person to talk to about this because you and your family, I know, have had some wonderful wandering adventures. And actually online, you're known as Wandering Alice. That's right, isn't it?
That's correct.
Yeah. So it'd be really lovely if you could share a little bit about you and your family and I guess how you became a home educating family.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. It's nice to hear, to be reminded of how we connected first off, actually, because it must have been a couple of years now, if not longer. So, yeah, it's nice to be reminded of that. And thank you for welcoming me. So, I'm Alice. I'm a writer. I also teach writing to home ed kids, and I'm a yoga teacher. And I've also been home educating my daughter for 16 years alongside my husband. And I guess I'll start with the wandering part, because that kind of weaves its way into everything as a family and our life and going into home ed. So I've always loved the idea of new places and experiences. And even as a child, I grew up like on a city estate, and I can remember like packing a bag and saying, you know, announcing I was going off to the next estate to climb trees, and like everything was an adventure to me. And you know, I guess from a very young age I felt that seed, you know, of how I might want to live. But in my world, you know, I left school, I got a job, 9-to-5 job. That's what my peers did. And, you know, I left home and moved into a flat and just kind of got on with the 9-to-5 life. But I always still had that kind of connection to nature and to the earth. And, you know, I'd be cycling back from my 9-to-5 office job, you know, stopping at a lake to write some poetry or something. But maybe I didn't reveal those sides of myself to everyone in those days. I mean, we didn't have social media, we didn't share as much, so people only saw, you know, what they saw. But that was my kind of life. And I used to go to the library a lot, and I just devour books on travel and just experiences that people had. And it was very prominent in my family. You know, my mum and dad were big travellers in between, you know, working, because you still had to get a proper job. But, you know, they had long adventures. You know, they drove all the way through Scandinavia and up to Russia in the 60s, you know, in their little van with, I think, three kids at that time, not me, but three of my older siblings. And so there was always that kind of seed in my life, but it was kind of, you got a proper job and, you know, you paid your mortgage. So, but then I found the book Laurie Lee, As I Walked Out One Midsummer Morning. And I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it was written in the 30s. And this guy, Laurie Lee, he left his home in Somerset in England and he walked to Spain. And I was just, I don't know, something in that book just made me think there's a different way to live and I would like to live that way. So lots of things in, you know, happened and various things took place. But in my early 20s, I got to go and spend 6 months in Japan. And then there were road trips around Spain and France. And then when I got to sort of mid 20s, again, lots of things happened in between, lots of knocking on doors and trying to get in. But I landed a job writing for a travel guide. And so I traveled all over the world and wrote for this guide, and I loved the job. You know, it was very much me. So all of that kind of was nurturing my wandering spirit, I guess you would say. And then 20 years ago, I met my husband, and it was kind of like, okay, now we settle down, because that's what we do. You know, you can't just, you know, a lot of people around me were saying, you need to settle down now. You can't just go off traveling. And, but between me and my husband, we both had this desire to have experiences over things and feel a sense of freedom in the way that we wanted to live our life. So when our daughter, so then I fell pregnant, and when our daughter was, I think she was not even one, we sold our house and we moved into a little camper and we went off traveling around France and Spain and Portugal. And we just said, well, we'll enjoy, we'll just go and travel. And when our daughter reaches school age, we'll have to stop and we'll, you know, decide where we want to be, kind of thing. So off we went. But then we were in Portugal and I met a lady who was home educating her child, who was, I think, 7 at the time. And I remember vividly standing on this hillside. We were helping to put up a yurt base. We were volunteering, and she started to tell me about homeschooling, and I didn't even know that it was a thing. I didn't know that you were allowed to do it. It just like was all new to me. I mean, it's funny because my mum said afterwards that I had gone to Brownies as a young child with somebody who was homeschooled, but I didn't, you know, I didn't remember that fact. So it was all new to me, and I just was listening to her. She introduced me to Steiner and the idea of like kids don't have to do anything necessarily like formal until the age of 7. All of this was just new ideas, but it resonated. And I just felt like this is interesting to me. I like the sound of this. I like this way of living and learning as we live. So I bought some books. I educated myself. I don't think there were many blogs at that time. I mean, this is going back 15 years or something. So, you know, I bought some books, and eventually we went back to the UK, and our daughter did go to a preschool 2 mornings a week. But at the same time, I located my local home education group and started to kind of do park meetups, that kind of thing. And this whole new world began to take shape. And I think when our daughter was maybe 4, she had a year before she was due to start school, we were like, okay, let's drop the preschool because it wasn't really working for us. And we'll just connect with the home ed group. We'll see how it goes. And if it doesn't work out, then she can go to school as normal. And, you know, that was, I don't know, probably how 12 years ago now. So she never went to school, and we didn't look back, but we've always taken it one step at a time. And she's now 16. We've lived you know, she's never known any different than learning and living on the move. So we've lived in Portugal, Spain, France, Scotland, Wales, England. You know, we've lived on narrow boats, camper vans, caravans. We've lived in a yurt. So she's never known any different than just to move around and kind of bed down in different communities. But we've always sort of traveled slow. So we'll take, you know, some time in a place and make connections and then maybe go back to that place a year later or that kind of thing. So, yeah, I think that is enough of an introduction to maybe introduce you to our life on the move and, yeah, how I got into home ed. So,
yeah, no, I think that's really interesting. It's funny, you used a couple of phrases there that I used yesterday talking to, I met somebody at a home ed meet yesterday who I've not met before. And I remember saying it was like a whole new world had opened up, which I think you just said, Alice. And it's funny as well, because it must have been around the same time that you discovered home education that actually we did. But my daughter was like 10 or 11 by the time I discovered it. So I'm always in awe of people who discover home ed when before their children are school age. And obviously we're where we are, and it was the right time for us to discover it. So it's not that I regret it, but I just think it's really, yeah, it's really interesting that you know, that so many people, yeah, do find it before their children are school age.
I think that's why it's so important, isn't it, to sort of share your stories and talk about it. Because if I hadn't have met that lady on, and I don't know her now, I mean, you know, if I hadn't have met her and she, you know, would I have found it at the same time? It's like you have to meet somebody had to introduce it to me, because I would have stumbled upon it as I, you know, was raising my daughter, but at that point it was certainly an alien concept to me. Yeah
I mean, I felt totally the same. I was like I just did not know that this existed at all, and it seems so strange now, but that was definitely the case. So I'm interested, Alice, if you had to describe your style of home ed, are there any kind of labels that you're drawn to or not, I guess? And do you think that that's kind of changed, evolved over time?
Yeah, I mean, like I say, we took home education one step at a time. So it was kind of like, okay, we'll do it until she's seven, you know, and then okay, maybe we'll do it until she's 10. And then it was, well, maybe until secondary, you know, and then so we kind of took it one step at a time. So we've always been very free flowing. We've never had a real plan, which is kind of, you know, throughout all of our life. But I would describe our home education style as like child led. I definitely resonate with unschooling. I don't feel that, I mean, maybe actually in the very beginning, I did even write a little timetable, you know, of what we were going to do. And very quickly, within a week, probably, that just went by the wayside. And again, it was talking to people in my local community and meeting people that had slightly older children and hearing different approaches that, you know, things resonate, don't they? And then you choose your own path. But for us, it's definitely about following passions, you know, and deep dives. Our daughter she always wanted to really it sort of soak everything up. So, you know, one year she wanted to do art. So everything was just painting, charcoal, you know, and she spent the entire, you know, months just doing art. And then, you know, it might have been crafts and sewing, and she made like outfits for all of her teddies one year, and we just let her roll with it. So it, for us, it's definitely just child-led and facilitating what she was interested in at that time and supporting that. Yeah. And, you know, when she was into art, she would be doing art. We found a wonderful art teacher where we were, and she would go to her house. It was a very artistic kind of environment, really lovely. And she did that for, you know, lots of things that we've done over the years where we've just support, like at the moment here we are in England and in our caravan staying on a farm, because Isabella is she's doing like a, she's training horses, that like nervous horses, and she's working with someone who's teaching her about natural horsemanship. So again, we're here and we're supporting because that's where her passions have led her. That's what she's interested in. So, I mean, we did a few, maybe we followed a maths curriculum for a while, very, very loosely. So, you know, but generally it's just been about getting out, living, experiencing, allowing her to see what makes her tick, because I'm a huge believer in that. You know, when I was growing up, I always loved writing, always loved nature, but not that it wasn't nurtured, but it wasn't a job, you know, and you went to school and you had to get your exams, and then, you know, in my world, you went and got a job. So it kind of took me a long time, quite a few years after that, to find, and I still ended up doing probably what I would have ended up doing a long time before. So that's how I feel with my daughter, is just allowing her to find herself and live the life that she wants to live and be happy living it. So, yeah. Is that a bit roundabout way?
No, I think that's great. I love it. It's so interesting, isn't it? I mean, I wanted to be a bit more of a wandering soul for a while. And when we first started Home Ed, I think I was very much influenced by the fact that a lot of the Home Eders that I was reading about and hearing about were Americans who were in vans on the road in America. And that all sounded really cool. And I really loved the idea of getting a van. And actually, my children were 11 and 9 and 5 when we started Home Edding. And really, we should have done it then, because, of course, they soon got really long legs. And then we had another baby and it all became a little bit more complicated. But we did actually do an extended holiday a few years ago in a van, in a motorhome, as a kind of trial, but also just because we wanted to do something really special. My daughter was finishing her A-levels, going to university, and we thought, maybe this will be our last holiday altogether. It definitely hasn't been, but it was still lovely to have that experience of the six of us in a van for, it was a little bit over a month. But one of the things I really loved about that, and I know this is one of your great passions, Alice, but is the connection to nature. I mean, I feel like that a lot about any holiday, but especially about living in a van. I mean, there were six of us, and it was quite a big motorhome, not on the American scale, but it wasn't a little tiny thing. But the first thing we did every morning was open the door, because, you know, we needed a bit of space, and it was just that thing that you, going outside was just so much easier than it is when you're at home. And again, like I say, I feel that on any holiday, really, but I think it was even more so with the van, definitely.
Yeah, and I think that's it, isn't it? It's, you know, I know that when I've spent time in houses, it's much easier to, for me, yeah, it's harder for me to get out. But when I live, you know, in boats or in a yurt or in like a caravan like I am now, nature is just there at every turn. And like you say, that's a huge passion of mine, is just connecting to that. And I suppose when you ask, actually, you know, what's our kind of style of home educating, a huge part is nature. You know, I mean, we went for a no technology kind of upbringing for our daughter, and she didn't have, you know, access to, not saying that she never had access to tech, you know, but she didn't have anything of her own until she was around 12, 13, because, yeah, we just wanted to kind of immerse all of us, actually, because we're the same, as you know, technology is wonderful. It connects us. Look at us now. I love it. But I think it's a tool, and sometimes we can forget that and become, it's very easy to become sucked in. So for us, as a family, it was very important that we, you know, spent a lot of time in nature, and that's what worked for us. So I would say that played a big part. And yeah, you know, just living in the way that we live, it's accessible at every turn, it just makes you get outside, doesn't it? Like you say, the first thing you do in the morning, you open the door and there it is.
Alice, I'm curious, you know, what you think your daughter's experience has been as far as, I'm just guessing, many interesting people she's probably met along the way, and just, you know, just the things that come up naturally if you're either on the road or you're somewhere new. Because I can think, even for us, we haven't done certainly the amount of travel that you have done, but we've done some kind of excursions here and there, and quite a bit of camping, and a few, well, one very adventurous time because the kids were younger and we did a train. We went by train, well, train and ferry. It was quite a piece together thing. That I took my mother-in-law and the kids, and we did about, I think, 3 weeks to the East Coast of Canada. And it was really interesting just because it was like, we were traveling by rail. So we'd stay somewhere a couple of days, then we'd get back on. And I find the same thing with camping is that we connect sometimes with the campsite across from us or with people that we see who kind of have maybe a similar rhythm to their day, like they tend to go down to the water at the same time of the day or whatever. And I feel like my kids have just met some really interesting people, and not in an exotic kind of a way, but just talking to kind of regular people. And it was interesting, you kind of used the word, I think you used the word slow, like slow living. And that's how I would describe it. Like just talking to somebody about their experience at another campground, or, you know, and all of a sudden when you talk to just kind of quote regular people, you learn so many interesting things. Like you learn about them and then they kind of introduce you to other ideas. And I'm just curious what your perspective is, kind of what that's been like for your daughter to meet different people. But from how it sounds to me, it's in a very slow kind of everyday kind of a way.
Yeah, and it is an everyday way. And I think that's my, you know, sometimes when we use the word travel, I think that it can conjure up all these ideas of exotic locations and big trips. And, you know, for us, it's not like that. And that's why I suppose I resonate with the word wandering, because it's a slower kind of just experiencing. And you're right. We've rented houses, you know, a couple of years ago we were renting in a little village up a mountain in Portugal, and, you know, we just mixed with all the regular people that lived there. And I think that's, for me, where the beauty is. And I know that I've seen in our daughter, just her, as she's grown up, her acceptance and ease really at talking with people from all walks of life, because that's what she's been used to. And I do think that's where the magic is with, you know, you can go off for a month and travel, but you might not actually really truly learn anything or see anything. Do you know what I mean? It's like it, sometimes it's much deeper than that, and yet it's deeper, but in a much simpler way. You know, our daughter has made friends all over. I mean, we have joined up with little home ed groups in different places, but she's also made friends, you know, she's written letters, and she still has those friends now in those different pockets of places. And I think that's really important. But you actually said something at the beginning which really reminded me of one trip that we did, which was 10 years ago now, but I took my dad, who was, so maybe he was 74 I think at the time, and my daughter, and we bussed our way through Spain and Portugal for a month, the three of us. And what I have found about home education is not just the connections that you're making with regular people wherever you go, but also the time that we've been able to spend with extended family. Like, I don't think we would have had the opportunity to do that easily if we were working, and, you know, as in a, you know, if we'd have stayed in the life where we were before, it wouldn't have been so easy to take that month out and go wandering with granddad and, you know, the three of us. And that was a fantastic experience and a huge learning experience for our daughter. And so, yeah, I think the magic is in the everyday people and just the experiences of, you know, I don't have to go far to feel living on narrowboats is kind of like that. You don't have to travel far on your narrowboat because you can only go at 4 miles per hour. So, you know, it's slow travel. But you don't have to travel far because it's a new place. It's new things to see. It's new people. It's new, you know, experiences. And it could just be, you know, half an hour down the road if you were driving. So I think that's really an important distinction to make, as far as I'm concerned, that we can explore and we can experience, but we don't necessarily have to go to, you know, it doesn't have to be far-flung places.
I think you're right, Alice. I think that when I was thinking about our little trip, though, this could apply to holidays, I guess. So it's about being, I suppose, outside of your normal area, maybe. But the thing about kind of casual interactions with people, which of course we get in daily normal life, but I kind of feel like there's so much more potential for it when you're kind of out of the ordinary, I guess. If you're going to a place, like you said, Erin, I think about campsites, didn't you? If you're going to a campsite and then you've kind of got new neighbours and you need to ask people about where things are. And if you're in a new town, then you need to know where the facilities are. And it kind of becomes more, you kind of get more practice, don't you, as you're doing that, and you become more, I don't know whether the word is confident necessarily, but I guess comfortable maybe in the whole, in that whole casual interaction with other people. And I was thinking about this yesterday as well, when I met somebody that had been from my local area who'd been home edding for quite a long time, but we'd never run into each other before. And I was kind of thinking about that as well in relation to home education. Again, it's not specific to home education, but it's something that I was thinking about, that potential, yeah, for our children to meet different people with different backgrounds and different ideas. It's really lovely, isn't it? It's really lovely when you go to a home ed meet and that kind of happens a lot, where new people join or you just run into people that you've never met before because you just haven't gone to the same meetups. But I think it's lovely what you say about your daughter, Alice, about her being very comfortable with talking to lots of different people, because that's just been a part of her life for so long.
And I think, and people of different ages and backgrounds and everything, and I think it's just that naturalness of life, isn't it, when you're kind of just living and I always say, wherever we go, I'm like, oh, isn't it amazing, everyone's just getting on with their life, you know, wherever we go in the world, it's everybody is kind of the same. So and it's always really apparent to me, and I think that when you embrace that, and when you embrace that everydayness wherever you are, then I think that has definitely, for our daughter, I've seen a confidence with communication with people, and people of all ages, definitely.
And that's a lovely thing for us all to feel a bit closer as well around the world. Like you say, the fact that we do all have, you know, similar challenges and similar things that we're worrying about and similar things that we're filling our days with, and you know, that's a very connecting, powerful,
it loops back, doesn't it, to just thinking about that exoticness of travel, when actually, even if you go to what's seemingly an exotic destination, everyone's just the same, you know. And that's how I kind of, and I guess that even when I think about that book that I spoke about earlier about Laurie Lee, it's like he just walked through Spain and he just met everyday people, and that's where the richness is, you know. Like I can remember years ago being in Copenhagen and at the Little Mermaid statue, and people were just kind of on their way to the airport, in the taxi, jump out, take a picture, get back in the car, get to the airport. And I was like, and I sat there for a few hours and just pondered, and, you know, in my usual pondering way. And I just thought, wow, you're not really, you're just taking a photo, but you're not experiencing it. I mean, and it's not for me to say what's right and wrong, you know, this is just like my observation, that for me personally, I just want to absorb. I mean, I remember a good friend of mine came over from the States a few years ago, and we were living on a boat at the time, and we were like, where do you want to go? Do you want us to take you to London? Not on the boat, you know, but what do you want to go and do? And he was like, I just want to hang out. Can we just go and, like, you know, watch the boats coming through the lock, you know, just kind of everyday stuff to us. But and that's what I'm like. I just want to hang out. I just want to see what life is like in this place, you know? So,
yeah. I think we've talked a lot on this podcast about slowing down. I think, haven't we? As being quite a positive, positive part of home education, definitely. I mean, it's really interesting that you mentioned the Laurie Lee book, Alice, because we have a friend who used to live on a boat, and he's got a wandering spirit, and he came to stay a couple of weeks ago, and he literally was telling me, I'm sure it must be the same book, because he was telling me they had read this book and it was really inspiring, and he was thinking about, yeah, walking around Spain. So it's just such a coincidence that you mentioned that.
And I think it is inspiring, because I think it reminds all of us that, I mean, walking is a huge thing for me, and still, unfortunately, back in 2020, when everything kind of went crazy, we were in France at the time, and we were planning to walk to Portugal as a family, and it all had to be called off. And that was like a lifelong dream of mine, to go on this big, you know, just walking with a tent. And I think the reason those books are inspiring is just all you need is a pair of shoes and, you know, a faith and a belief in the human spirit and kindness. And any of us can do any of that. So that's a huge thing for me. Again, always coming back to the fact that, you know, you don't have to have, I don't know, not everything has to be in line to have these big adventures. You can just take that first step and make it your own. Yeah,
I think that's really helpful, Alice. And I'm thinking, as you're speaking, about how myself, and like I imagine some other families, home educating or not, have these ideas of traveling, or maybe even just going on more holidays as a family. And you sometimes, I know I could even feel like, it seems like such a big thing to take on, right? Because we are so used to our daily rhythm and comfortable in our home. And maybe if we haven't gone on a holiday or many holidays, or maybe not traveled before we had kids, it can just seem like such a big adventure, which it can be. But I really love how you're sharing about your experience and talking about this way of living, how traveling doesn't have to be, you know, this kind of huge thing to take on, but rather, and maybe it's one of those things where once you start and once you do it, it's almost like you figure it out and you practice what feels good, you know, how far to go, how long to go, where to stay. Like, there's all these options on how to do it, but it can be, it can feel calm, it can feel slow, it can feel easygoing. And I think that's probably really helpful. I know it's really helpful for me to listen to this, because my husband and I would love to be seeing and experiencing more places. And I think by now, so my two are 9 and 6, and I think we thought we would have been showing them a lot more places, even within our own country, within our own province, than what we have so far. So that's kind of easing my mind a bit in thinking about it that way. But I had a question, I think, around that a bit. I'm wondering if in your experiences, and I know it's very different than our family because we haven't done that, and you've been doing it with your daughter from the beginning. So that's, I can see how that's helpful in ways, because your daughter was used to it and that's what she knew. I'm curious if you ever, yourself or someone in your family, ever you were away somewhere, or you reached a point where one of you, or maybe more than one of you, kind of thought, is this still what we want to be doing? Is this still feeling good? Like, did it ever come back? Like, should we go settle down somewhere? And if you, maybe you didn't really have that experience once you were out there, but if you did, I'm just curious how that felt, and how is that like a bit of an ongoing conversation?
I think it actually is a really good question, because I think how we live our life is constantly between kind of movement and settling down. And there is definitely a pull for us to, you know, want our own piece of land and want somewhere to root down on. And, you know, we're constantly wavering, like, so we might do that for a couple of years and then we might get itchy feet again. So then we kind of, and I think that's why we've lived in so many different places and ways, because, and it's like our hometown, you know, we come back to that hometown and we, you know, catch up with all of our friends there. And we might be there for a year or two, you know, and maybe we go off again for a month here or there. So it's always very fluid. But I wonder, like, I'm thinking to myself, like, what does settling down mean to me, you know? And I think that's the question, because it's kind of like, I could feel a bit settled now, but settling down to me means buying a house kind of in my hometown and living in it. And I don't see that happening. And I don't think for a very long time that we have felt the pull to that, because we sort of, yeah, value the freedom that we have to move around, and we wouldn't want to be kind of tied down to one place. But it's definitely something that, yeah, if we're, when we, we did go away in our camper back in 2019, and we were traveling for quite a few months, and we all became a bit kind of, yeah, we want to settle down. We want to, you know, I don't know, get a house or just settle. I can't remember what we did after that. Maybe we did buy a boat, which is kind of settled for us, because we can go to our hometown on our boat and spend time there, but we can equally, we can go off. So yeah, again, it's just following at the moment, you know, we're rooting down in a way, because our daughter is doing this kind of apprenticeship type thing. So we are committing to rooting down, at least for this year here. So yeah, I don't know. I don't really know is the answer. And I don't really know what settling down means to me, but I do know that if I'm honest, there is always a dream of having a little piece of land somewhere that we can go back to that feels maybe like a root or a home. But then maybe when I do have that, which I have had, we very soon I don't know, get a bit fed up with it. So yeah, I guess our life is in constant movement, so we are rooted within the movement. I think that's how I feel. So we can be rooted, but we are still, it feels like we're still in movement. I don't know if that answers your question very well.
It does. It does so beautifully. I love that answer so much. Yeah, I loved, even when you said there, I don't know for sure. And it makes me think, I'm thinking about that freedom piece now and how, I mean, what a great way to feel, to be comfortable on the go, on the move, but being able to slow down, settle down, whatever, you know, the word, whatever word would feel right, but then have the freedom to pick up and go elsewhere. I guess just a quick follow-up question I'd have with that. I hope you haven't already mentioned it and I missed it, but so I'd imagine, I'm assuming you guys have a list of places that you hope to visit that you haven't got to yet, because I just think, who doesn't have that? But I wonder, I get the sense that you probably don't have a list where you go, we don't know when, but we'll get to these places. So my question is, how do you decide? Is it seems very like, almost like how you described your education, like interest-led and passion-led. So is that kind of too how you decide as a family where to maybe move to next? Or have you, is that what it's been like in the past when you're kind of being like, okay, I think we're ready to move on or go elsewhere? How do you decide where to go?
We have been known to just all of us put a pin in a map, but I mean, we've kind of stayed within Europe because we have two dogs. So, you know, we've often gone back to Portugal because we did have a place there for a couple of years, and we met a lovely home ed community there a couple of years ago. So we've gone back there to spend time, and I don't know, it's just opportunity and things that happen. You know, we went up to the Highlands of Scotland because an opportunity to kind of volunteer and live on this amazing place came, and we took it. again, just volunteering actually is something that I would really recommend, because we've done a lot of, I don't know if you're familiar with, you know, you work in return for your board and your food, and you can work on farms, you can work in all kinds of, like, even just people that have a little small holding and need help. So we've done a lot of that, and that has been, you know, an amazing way to meet people from all over. And then sometimes that leads to another, you know, opportunity. So yeah, we don't really have a plan. We just go with what we need at that moment. Often, you know, we were just in Portugal actually for the whole of January, because I think we just kind of hit a bit of, we hadn't traveled really in the 2 years of the pandemic, and we just needed to get away and just kind of center ourselves. So we said, let's go to Portugal, because our daughter has a couple of really close friends there, and then she could do things, and, you know, we really love it. So that was what drove that, you know. Next year we are hoping to go and spend 3 months back in Greece, which is where my husband and I started our kind of, that's where, you know, we had spent some time on an island in Greece when we were first together. So we want to go back and take a road trip through Greece and see where that takes us. But, you know, what's the reason? Because our daughter spent a lot of time in Greece when she was tiny, but of course she doesn't remember it. And it's a huge part of our life as a couple. And we want to share that with her while she's, you know, still here with us and, you know, not too independently going off in her own direction. So yeah, we're going to do, hopefully that's our next plan. But I don't know. Yeah, it's very difficult because I suppose of how we live and it is just free flowing. I don't think that we have, we certainly don't have a list of places that we want to see, although we want to see everywhere. You know, so, but we are quite tied with our dogs as well. And we travel as a family. So that's really important to us. So, and again, that all weaves in with the idea of, you know, travel doesn't have to be a far flung place. It can just be a way of life, a way of movement. So, yeah.
Alice, when you're talking about, I think you had said your daughter had some friends in Greece, or was it Portugal? Portugal. Yeah. I'm curious about how that all works as far as the three of you deciding, like, what, I mean, I know in home education and particularly maybe in more of kind of unschooling circles, there's a lot of conversation about like consent and, you know, children having a say or whatever. How does that, I'm curious how that works in your family as far as making those kinds of plans. Do you find that because you've been, so what I find in my family, travel or not, because we've been living in this kind of connected, communicating way for a long time, it's almost like there's a certain number of things that happen quite naturally that we're all sort of on the same page. And then there are certain number of things that maybe we're not on the same page at the beginning, but we've developed kind of these ways of waiting a little bit for somebody or communicating and people kind of talking about what they'd really like to do. So I would just love to hear about what that process is for, I guess for the three of you, considering that it's, you know, it's two adults and then she's a child, which, you know, traditionally it would be fair for you to say, we're the parents, you're coming here and you're coming there and this is what we've decided. But I sense it's a bit different.
Yeah. From the thing. So I actually do often say that to my husband, where I'll say, you know, when we were kids, it was kind of, you're going to do this because we're the, like you say, we're the parents. And this is what, there was no conversation sitting around the table. Like, what do you think? Where would you, you know, do you mind if we move you down the length of the country? You know, it just happened. But certainly, yeah, with our daughter, we talk all the time and we have a very open kind of, yeah, discussions about everything. And if something isn't working, then we move on. And, you know, at the moment, like I've said, you know, for our daughter, this is something that's really important to her. So we will support that and we'll be here. And then, you know, next year when we want to go to Greece for 3 months, she's really up for it. But, you know, there may well be at that point that she's settled in something that she's doing. But I know that she will bend as well, because we bend, and it's just a kind of, yeah, I think that we're always in ongoing conversation. And I actually would be honest and say that sometimes I have worried about that, thinking we're expecting her to talk in detail about these things, and she just wants us probably to make a decision, you know, but we're kind of like, you know, what do you think? And how would you feel about this? And really, sometimes I think she'd just be like, I really just want you to make the decision. I don't mind. So there is that danger. But yeah, I don't know. I guess it's just, we've never hit any massive hiccups. And I think a big part of that is that we are not afraid to move on. So if something isn't working, we move on and we do something else. You know, that's what life feels like. Certainly for me and my husband, life is about experiences. Nothing needs to be forever, unless you want it to be, and that's fantastic. But if that's not for you, life is full of experiences that are just waiting there to be lived, and go for it. And I guess because we've raised our daughter in that way, you know, it wouldn't necessarily definitely be so that she would come out feeling the same, you know, as she grows older, but she at the moment she does feel, you know, pretty much the same. And I know that she still, there's places that she wants to go and things that she wants to do. But I guess that's the thing. I think we raise her with the awareness that you can change anything. Nothing needs to be forever, you know. So, I mean, that's how I feel.
Oh, thank you. No, I love that. And I, you know, we had been talking about, and we might still, but I'm not sure. We've been talking pretty seriously about traveling in a few months. My mother-in-law is always up for these adventures. So it was actually her. She said, so what's our next? Because we've done these sort of, not to the lake that you're talking about, but we've done a few, like couple weeks here or, you know, and she's usually up for the train to train adventures or these different sorts of things. And so we've done with her the East Coast of Canada. And then we've also gone out to Newfoundland, and she would really like, I think she and I have both been to the West Coast, but the kids haven't. And of course, Canada is such an enormous country that's, you know, it's not a small thing to think about. Anyway, and my son's been doing a lot of researching on like camper vans and RVs, and he had been even prior to my mother-in-law saying, you know, when's our next adventure? I'd love to go to the West Coast. So anyway, we had a fairly detailed plan. I guess we could say we still do. You know, but my daughter's come to me a few times and just said, because we have two cats that are beginning to age. And she said, Mom, we can't leave the cats for a month. We can't leave the cats for a month. And at first I listened, and then, but there was a part of me that was thinking, but also my mother-in-law's turning 80 in the fall. And, you know, we're also at a point where if it would work that my guys could get the time off work, I mean, that's not going to be forever that we could do that. Kind of like you were saying, Haley. So I was thinking, you know, but they're cats. But then I've been watching how big a part of our life the cats are. And so anyway, there's been no decision made, but it's just, I guess I've just been noticing how, I don't know, maybe in the way that I was raised, we would have just gone because like they're cats. But I'm considering it. I'm thinking about it more. I'm watching how important this is to her. I'm thinking, like, is there a different way we could do it? And we haven't even decided financially if it's a total possibility yet. But anyway, I guess all that to say that I think living this way in connection with our kids and really respecting their opinions, you start to have thoughts that you know, if you had said to me 20 years ago that we might give up an opportunity because of two cats, I would have been like, no, you know, of course we wouldn't. But it's not just about the cats. It's about what's important to different people in the family. Right. So anyway, that's just kind of what that brought up for me, is the way that we begin to make decisions and think about things a little bit differently.
And it's just about conversation, isn't it? Like you say, listening to our kids and listening to their opinions and their thoughts, you know, that's really important to us. But something that just popped into my mind is you could take your cats with you.
Well, that would work for one of the cats.
Oh.
We have a very unique cat. Our other cat is quite something. So, yeah. But it would work for one of the cats. But that was one of the things that we did wonder about and think about. And who knows, maybe we could still figure it out. But
you know, another home educating family who have travelled mostly around the UK and Scotland and Wales and England, but in their little van with their daughter and their cat. And when they came to stay up, they would sort of meet up at different points, you know, wherever we both are, we would meet up over the years occasionally, and their cat would come and the cat would go for walks. And, you know, yeah, so it is possible. But like you say, you're now taking into account the personalities of your cats. And like us with our two dogs, you know, one of our dogs now is 17 and she's not, you know, we did take her to Portugal in January. But, you know, we're mindful of where she's at, and that's really important to us. So I understand. Yeah,
we'll see. We'll see what happens. But yeah, and we have seen, you know, we've seen lots of people camping with cats, which was interesting because we'd always seen lots of dogs. There's lots of dogs at various camping places, but we've started to notice more people bringing their cats. So yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah, all that sounds really interesting, Erin. I'm excited to hear how that pans out and yeah, where you do get to. I think and the both of you talking there about how much you're listening to your kids and stuff is so lovely. And I've had some of the same thoughts, Alice, as you were talking about, in terms of thinking, yeah, are we putting pressure that we don't need to on our children in terms of offering them choices? And I know when my kids came out of school in the first place, it originally the plan was just for my eldest daughter. We discovered home ed. She thought it was great, went off and did loads of research. And after a lot of soul searching, we decided that she was going to leave school, but the other two could stay at school if they wanted to. And we ended up having lots of conversations. And I remember people being quite shocked that we were allowing a five-year-old to decide whether he wanted to carry on going to school or not. And obviously it wasn't just his decision, it was a decision we were making together, obviously. And but even the nine-year-old, I felt there was that pull about whether or not it was too much for them. But I think the thing is what you were saying about, if you have that open conversation, then I think they're able to tell you if it's too much as well, aren't they? I guess, and you build up the relationship so that you can get more of a sense of that, I guess.
And I would say that's exactly what popped into my mind just listening to you there, is now that our daughter is 16, you know, we have a very open conversational relationship. She shares with us, and I suspect that that has a lot to do with the fact that we did. But I think that no matter what any of us do, we always doubt ourselves and think, are we doing the right thing? You know, it's not, you know, there's no set way to parent, is there? You just do what you feel is best at that time. And, you know, I think that if you do things with love and kindness and caring, then it's always going to be fine, you know, one way or another. So, but for us, yeah, I've definitely had those thoughts. Oh, we're putting too much responsibility on her making decisions. But the outcome at the moment for us is that I feel that we do have a very open and respectful family relationship, which, you know, is really good. So,
That's so lovely. I think there's a song lyric, and it might be Maximo Park, somebody like that, who's something about, is the ones that never doubt that I'm worried about, or something like that. And it's that thing about how, you don't want worry and anxiety to to stop you from ever making any decisions and ever getting on with life. But there's always room for improvement, isn't there, I guess, or reflection or doubt, or those things help.
I'm a huge person for self-reflection. I think it's really important. You know, it's really hard to look at ourselves and think, maybe I didn't do that so well, or maybe I could do that better, and then say to your child or your husband or whoever, you know, actually I've reflected on that, and I'm, you know, that's hard to do, but I think it's so important. And certainly in our journey, you know, home educating, that has come up a lot. Just, you know, sometimes things don't go so well and you sit down and you talk about it and you're honest, and then you change it. And I think that's the most important thing. I always say to my daughter, you know, it's okay to, I don't know, do something that you don't feel great about, as long as you can say sorry and you can talk about it and you can move forward. That's the most important thing. So,
I wonder too if, so I think this is true of probably home education in general, but maybe even more so if you're traveling, you know, you're traveling together and you kind of have this common journey. But I think, I remember, Ashley, you alluded to this on back in a conversation, and I think we were maybe talking about camping, and you said something about the fact that it kind of provides a natural, you didn't use these words, but I almost want to say like division of labor, because you're working together, right? So, and it's that more natural type of life where it's getting dark. So you're probably, you might be living a little bit more communally, right? You might be building a fire at the same time, and that's what I find, even if we're away and it's not in kind of nature spaces, you're still together and you're working as a unit. And so I think that some of the assumptions around, I'm just going to use the word battles between parents and children, come a lot around people being away from each other a lot, right? So everybody's coming from school or daycare or maybe a long commute from work. And there's maybe this, this assumed tension or whatever. Whereas I think what I found is actually the more time that we spend together as a family, the more in sync that we get. And that's definitely true for our home life. But I also find it if we're away, you're having to work together. So I think these ideas about, you know, chores or not chores, or do you force kids to clean up this or clean up that? I think some of these might be modern problems. Like, I think when people are working together, and especially in something like travel, you're living together, you're working together. I don't know if that strikes a chord with anybody else, but that ever since you said that, Ashley, I thought, yeah, that's kind of true. We're all just living this experience together, and it just seems more natural to kind of pitch in and kind of be in sync, I guess. Do you find that, Alice, as far as being out? I don't know, even the difference maybe between times you've been somewhere and you've been a little bit more rooted versus being on the road. Like, do you think that as your daughter grew up, that was probably just part of your natural rhythm rather than maybe having these same thoughts that I hear a lot, or you read them in parenting magazines, you know, how much responsibility do you give your child, or what chores do they need to do? Do they need to keep the room clean? All those kinds of things that we see a lot about.
Yeah, I think you sort of said it really, that when you're living, and I think when you're spending time together, especially concentrated time, when you are out camping or when you're traveling, or, you know, you're spending that time together and you begin to work around each other. And I think if there is an open conversation and there is a respect, you know, when it comes to things like chores and things like that, things that you might not want your children to do, for instance, or it's about a mutual respect. So it's kind of, for our daughter, if we're living and we're doing the washing up and we're taking the rubbish out, or we're not, I don't know, sitting on our computers, or, you know, then she sort of weaves herself into that, and we all do, because we're all living together and we're close. And so yeah, I don't know, I think it is just about living and being together. Definitely, you know, you said something about, do we, when we're all coming from other direction, each different direction, then frictions occur. And I think when you're all kind of united in something that you're doing at that base level, then everything kind of works together. So, you know, we haven't had, you know, huge fallouts or issues about any of that, because I think that we've always been open, and you know, we've always been in the family as kind of equals. So yeah, that's how it's been for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I noticed that even here. I realized the other day that it just hit me, I have no idea who feeds the cats or gives the cats water. I said to somebody the other day, one of our cats wasn't feeling well. And I said, well, you know, is the water fresh, whatever? And like, they had that all worked out among them. But I think that's hard sometimes for people to understand. They picture there have to be, you know, chore charts or whatever. But I do think that there's something that happens very just kind of organically when there's people working together. And Ashley, I don't know if I misrepresented what you said, but was that, or if you even remember that conversation, but.
Right. Vaguely. No, I do, but I do, not the specifics, but I do remember, I recall that. But I'm actually thinking about, and this might be something that home educating families, or even families with one parent, or like the mom with young children at home. And I'm thinking about the experience of, I'll speak from my own experience. Like, I'm home, whether at home or the boys and I go out somewhere. So it's not always at home. It can be out somewhere, but it's me and my two boys a lot. And we're living much in the way you guys are describing, right? Like, we're just going about our day very much together. Some days quite a lot, whereas other days when we're at home, we might venture off a little bit more and then have to come back together. And that happens too. But it's the three of us very much going through the rhythm of our days together. And then dad comes home. So he's the one who's been away all day. And with my husband's shifts, like, the boys maybe haven't seen him for quite a while. And because he doesn't work the typical Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. So when he comes home from work, or on, like, he has typically three days off in a row. And I've always noticed this, like, adjustment that has to make. And I have to remind myself that as the boys and I go, we are very used to doing our days together. And even though, you know, this is a weekly occurrence where we have to get used to the few days that dad's home. And it's obviously an adjustment for my husband as well, but it's just that it surprises me actually how much of an adjustment it is. And I'm grateful that it's just that, it's just him having to come home and us making the adjustment. And it's not him and I both coming home from work and the kids from school. That obviously works for some families. I don't know. And maybe it's different as the kids are different ages too, but I was just kind of thinking about it from that experience as well, where there really is something there where you're just used to living life very much together. And it doesn't mean you've spent every single minute together. You still, everyone has their individual time too, but there is friction at times. There is, like, it's like this other person, right, is having to fit in. And then if it is more than just one person, it's the whole family coming from their different daily experiences and, you know, trying to weave back in together. And yeah, there's effort and energy that I guess goes into that. So it's interesting.
Mm. It just made me think, Ashley, about, I remember talking to a friend years and years ago when my children were at school about how lovely the school holidays were. Because everything just seemed, after the initial, you know, transition, I guess, from being at school to then being school holidays, everything suddenly became a lot easier. And then we used to dread the children going back to school, because then we thought, oh, things are going to get harder again. And that's so weird because a lot of times, you know, there are a lot of people who say to home educating families, oh, I don't know how you could do it. I don't know how you could just be around them all the time. But we kind of, yeah, me and my friend, I remember, talking about that even when they were at school, that thing about when you are together all the time, you know, obviously it's not all sunshine and roses all the time at all. And, you know, we have conflicts and arguments and upsets, and of course we do. But there is something about that. You mentioned the word organically, Erin, and it kind of feels like that. You get into that rhythm, don't you, of being together and everything seems to go that much more smoothly.
I was going to use that word myself, actually, rhythm, you know, just being in that rhythm. And when you are in that rhythm, like you say, of course you have conflicts and you know, that's natural in any everyday life, but you just learn to be around each other. And I sometimes think that we just overcomplicate a lot of things in, you know, modern life. And there's also a lot of influences and a lot of things that we're constantly kind of, you know, and that's why I love, you know, I'm really big on simplicity and just simplifying and, you know, coming back to nature, because sometimes it can just be all overwhelming. And when you've got many different family members all overwhelmed in different ways from different directions, you know, of course that's going to create a melting pot of huge emotions, I think. So a big thing for me would be, yeah, just coming back together to that central point and simplifying and, you know, leaving everything else to the side for a bit. I don't know if that ties in, but that's what I'm thinking of when I listen to you saying that.
I think we've probably touched on this quite a lot, but I wonder if there's anything else you want to say, Alice, about the best and the worst things, maybe, or one or the other, that you think about home ed on the move for you. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, the best things for me are the surprise of how, and we started off the conversation talking about everyday people, everyday life, the surprise of how much is out there in the world to learn for all of us, particularly our kids, just in everyday life, wherever you are. And just the confidence in communication that has come from all of those experiences. So the best things are definitely the communities that we've met, the different people, and the volunteering has been really instrumental for us on our travels, actually staying with families. You know, when our daughter was 6 or 7, I can't remember, I took her to Italy and we stayed with an Italian family, you know, right in the middle of nowhere, who had a daughter of the same age who was being home educated. And that was another wonderful thing to do, was to seek out other people in other countries that were home educating and go to those people and have that experience. And off the back of that, meeting so many people that come from different places because they come to volunteer. So, you know, you're sitting around tables. Our daughter has sat around so many big tables with people of all, from kids to, you know, 90-year-olds. We spent a lot of time in France, a particular place where we volunteered many years ago now, but we've gone back periodically and spent some time there. And, you know, our friend's mother would be there and she was in her 90s. And then there'd be, you know, our daughter, you know, she was probably 12, 13 the last time that we spent time there. And then there'd be kind of 18 to 30 year olds who were traveling from Chile or New Zealand, all over the place. And we're all sitting around that table together. And that, for me, of course you can recreate that in life wherever you are. You could bring people together, and why, maybe people should do more of that, you know, if they're not doing it already. But in those environments, it's happening naturally all the time. So that's definitely been the best thing in our life, just the relationships, the meeting people, the spending time together. And the worst things, the challenges, I would say, are when you want to spend time, like a longer period of time, finding a home ed community. You know, some people are a bit edgy because if they know that you're likely not to stay around, they don't want their children becoming friendly with your child, because they're like, oh, then you're going to leave us, kind of thing. But we have, you know, over the years managed to find enough communities where, so now, you know, last autumn we spent time up in the Highlands of Scotland where our daughter has her friends there, and she's, and they hung out and did, you know, the various things that they do. And then in January we went to Portugal and she hung out with her friends there and they had a great time. And then she's just celebrated her 16th birthday in her hometown with her friends, home ed friends that she's known since she was three. And, you know, we've managed to find these pockets of communities, but it does take some work, and sometimes it doesn't work out, and sometimes it's hard, and sometimes we've left places because we haven't been able to find what we felt was enough for our daughter. We don't believe that you have to just hang around with people your own age at all, but we did believe it was important for her to also have those connections, and if we were somewhere and it wasn't working out, then we'd move on, you know. And again, that would be a conversation, you know, we would be conversing together and we would know if she wasn't fulfilled or happy, and you know, we would move on to something else. So yeah, it's not necessarily easy to always find like-minded friends and build those relationships, but it is possible. And you know, we have been able to make that possible. And also I think an interesting thing to think of is that because we didn't have our daughter didn't have access to technology until she was 12 or 13. So she wasn't emailing, or I know nowadays it's like WhatsApp and things like that, but it was letters. So we, you know, we used sending postcards and letters and things, and she's managed to maintain, you know, she was with her best friend. They've known each other since they were three last week, and maintain that relationship on the move, pinging back, you know, on and off. And I mean, obviously now she has WhatsApp and, you know, she connects in those ways as well, but she has been able to build those long-term friendships even though we've not always been in the same place. And I think that's been, you know, it's been a hard part for us to be able to move to places in a way where we can find those relationships. So it has been difficult, and sometimes it's proved challenging, but it's also been a really rich part, because as time has gone on and we see, you know, sometimes you don't see the fruits, do you, until a bit later. And now we see these wonderful friendships that she has all over the place, and we're like, oh wow, you know, that's really cool. So yeah, I mean you know, I don't think there could be personally anything negative about being able to spend huge amounts of time as a family together. I think, you know, not, it's not suited to everybody at all. And, you know, I've got, you know, my oldest, dearest friend, absolutely one who said, I think it was you, Hayley, that said, people say, I don't know how you can do it. How can you say, you know, my friend who we've been friends since we were tots, we live completely different lives. There's absolutely no way that she would have home educated or lived in the way that we do. But, you know, we've both got our girls, and, you know, when my daughter goes to her, she gets to experience something completely different to what she experiences here. And when her daughter comes to me, and, you know, she gets to experience something. So I think that's, you know, a lovely thing. But for me personally, I don't think there can be anything negative when I think back about having 16 years with my daughter, that, you know, to be together, to live together as a family through the ups and the downs and the conflicts, you know, we love each other and we just love hanging out together. So yeah, I don't know.
Sorry, Alice, were you going to say something else?
No.
I was just going to ask you if, you know, if we've got people listening who are thinking about home ed on the road, do you have any tips or advice or any essential items you think people need?
No, because I think that the world is there, and, you know, you can just go for walks, and you can, you know, one thing that we did do with our daughter was she always had this great big art book every year. And she would stick stuff in it, the places that we went, she'd draw pictures, she'd write stories, you know, whatever. And now she has probably, I don't know, 12 of these books. And it's a kind of, library of her life. And, you know, we just went places, we walked, we read endless books. And so I don't think you really need anything other than each other, maybe a few good books and a scrapbook and just a willingness to open yourself up to what you might find on the way. I don't think that you need anything in particular, and I wish I could think of something really useful.
No, but, I think what you've said is perfect.
Alice, I just really appreciate this perspective, because I think this idea of wandering versus maybe world schooling, and I don't mean to put words in your mouth, because maybe you would use that term for yourself as well, but I think that world schooling is a really good fit for some people, but I think that maybe for some of us, we hear that term can feel a little overwhelming, right? It can feel overwhelming depending on the personalities of our family, depending on how much we like to plan, because it, you know, it feels always to me like there's a lot of planning involved with that. And just even the logistics of our life, like whether that's financial or being tied down with certain things. But I think when you talk about it in terms of like the wandering idea, it actually feels freer to me. Like it could mean so many different things, and it doesn't have to be resorts or booking plane tickets or even exchanges or any of those sorts of things. It can just be whatever is a fit at that time. And I like the fact that I think the example you were giving with your boat, you couldn't go very fast anyway. You don't have to go that far from home to be dipping into these experiences. And, you know, the other thing that came to mind for me was that, you know, when you were talking about meeting people from different places and your daughter being at tables with all these different people, you know, it's not even really maybe about the location all the time, because I think we get really focused on location. You know, what's on your bucket list? Where would you like to go? And then if you go there, where would you like to stay? Whatever. But really, the way that I picture it, if I'm understanding it correctly, you're at a location, but you're meeting people who are from different locations. And so you're learning bits and pieces about everywhere, not just the place that you're at. And I can see that even at a more local level, that happens for us when you're open to talking to people. You know, if you stop at a little shop, you know, in a village, and you show some interest in their shop or their business, and you listen a little bit, it's not just about going to that museum or that store. You're kind of open to what else comes about when you're there as well. So it feels so much more accessible the way you've described it today. So thank you for that.
No, you go on.
No, I was just going to say, you popped into my mind about, we rented this place in Portugal a couple of years ago. I think we were there maybe we were there 5 months, I can't remember. And we had this lovely elderly couple who were our landlord and landlady, you know. And, you know, our daughter would kind of harvest their fruit off their trees for them, and then make like these puddings and take them around, and then they would bring things around. And I just think about like the richness of, like you say, it's not necessarily about booking plane tickets and going to lots of places, which is also amazing. And the term world schooling, for me, I wouldn't put myself as a world schooler, because that to me feels too big and wide, and I would be, oh no, I don't fit into that's, you know. So I think it can be overwhelming, but just that idea that we can just travel, you know, we could all, I know you mentioned financially, we live on a shoestring, you know. I'm sure that for some people, you know, I don't want to assume, it can still be a difficult thing to do financially. But for us, we live very, very cheaply, and we always find somewhere like this said place that was, you know, very cheap to rent for a few months, and the richness of just being there in this village and mixing with local people. It wasn't anything fancy. It wasn't anything, you know, we didn't do huge, amazing things, but we were there and we experienced it. And, you know, there's a way to travel for everybody, and that's our way. And I think that that is more accessible to people financially. And, you know, everybody can go onto a Facebook group or something in a local area and connect with someone and say, hey, is there somewhere that we could rent for a month, you know, and strike up a personal deal. You know, you don't have to go onto Airbnb. I mean, where we stayed actually in January, in Portugal, was a place that we'd come across a few years ago, and it was through a Facebook group where I just put a call out, is there anywhere on the coast? We wanted to go to the coast, and we met this wonderful family who had kids, and they were like, yeah, come and stay in our apartment beneath our house, and they gave us a wonderful price to stay for. I think we stayed for a couple of months, and our daughter was able to hang out with their children, and we ended up going back there in January. So these opportunities are affordable for many people. And it is just a case sometimes of just, you know, getting up and going. And I know that it's hard because we don't have the ties of, you know, a permanent home. So, you know, I know that obviously that would make it more difficult, but there are definitely different ways to go about it, to make it affordable, to make it easy, and just to make it like an immersive experience within a culture, you know, or a place. And like you say, you know, if you go and volunteer, that's even more affordable because you don't have to pay for your board, you don't have to pay for your food, and you'll get the richness of likely meeting people from all over the world. So there are different ways to do it.
Well,
sorry, I was just going to say, I love what you said, Alice, before about it being a way of life and also an attitude, you were saying. And I think, I mean, I've seen before, a common bit of advice for new home edders is to become a tourist in your own town. And this kind of idea of looking at things in a new way. And I know we had this conversation recently, Alice, about your nature courses. Recently, you were talking about looking up, and that really resonated with me and reminded me that when I'm walking around quite often, I'm trying not to trip over because I'm a little bit clumsy, so I'm kind of looking at the floor. But that thing about remembering to look up and seeing the things, even in an area that you're really familiar with, that perhaps you don't always notice, and just that can bring kind of renewal into your life and give you energy and excitement and just a different perspective on things. And I just thought that was, yeah, something really lovely that you said.
I think that's why it's, when I do my nature journaling courses that I run, they're so important to me, because I want to encourage people to look up, just be in their local area, just be prompted to think about the things that we all take for granted and that we forget, the simple things, the free things, you know, that make us, like you say, create an energy and make us actually just feel glad. You know, we all need reminders, don't we, that life is short. We're not necessarily here for long. I lost my mum and my niece a year and a half ago. My niece was only 34. And that was a real reminder that life is short, and, you know, we can just find joy around us. And that's why I am passionate about nature, because I think that, you know, when you step into nature, you can kind of, all the things that we've kind of constructed around ourselves in this world. And that's the same for our children. You know, our children are growing up in a very different world to what even I grew up in. And there's a lot to take on, I think. It's a lot for me to take on. It's a lot for certainly my child to take on. So I've always been really passionate about making sure that she looks up, that she enjoys her surroundings, that she appreciates each season. And, you know, so I think that's why I do those courses, is to try and encourage people to, yeah, just find that that joy. So, and I do that, that's what kind of falls into the traveling. When we are traveling and we're traveling slow, or we're rooting down in a place for a month or 3 months, it's just about knowing that place. It's about being in that place. It's nothing fancy. You know, I do get nervous using the word travel, because I think that people are disappointed when I say, oh, yeah, yeah, we travel as a family. I think they're waiting for me to say that we've been in the Sahara and, you know, we're backpacking through Thailand or wherever. And it's like, it's not that those places aren't wonderful and that I wouldn't like to do that at some point, but financially, because of our dogs, there are limitations to us. So, yeah, just finding that joy in every day and in nature. So, yeah, look up, look down sometimes, but don't trip up, Hayley.
No, I'll try not to.
Sorry, Hayley, you're probably trying to wind things around, right? I had one more thing that came to mind, partly from what you said, Alice, and then what you added, Hayley, was just... Alice, I think you've been talking about the financial aspect of things and finding, you know, things don't have to be expensive, finding those interesting things. And sometimes they're actually more meaningful. And then Hayley, you had talked about being a tourist in your own town. And I got thinking about how many, so if we even think about wandering in our own community, how we can sometimes jump to the things that are in the paper or online. So something came to mind for me was like the maple syrup season here. So there are these big maple syrup festivals, and you would know this, Ashley, they probably in your area too, they have like the horses and the whole thing. And these are big events and they're wonderful. But sometimes they can be crowded and expensive and very kind of touristy. And some of our best times were just, you know, we had an opportunity a few times to just spend a day or two working a sugar bush when the kids were little and actually just doing the work there rather than watching a demonstration of it being done. And sometimes it feels like those experiences they might sound like they're too hard to find. But I think when you express interest in what people are doing, we had a similar thing happen recently at an alpaca, this quite a large alpaca farm. And of course they do, you know, I'm not sure, numbers of people wander through fields with alpacas and you can spend money doing that or whatever. And I just called one day, we were in the area, and I said, you know, a couple of us are here. Would we be able to just kind of have could we just come and have a look at your farm? And she said, yeah, absolutely. And so we went in and we ended up having such a good conversation that she invited us back kind of behind the scenes. And we got all kinds of time with the alpacas, and it gave us a lot of opportunity for conversation that we wouldn't have had if we were on like the 2 o'clock tour, you know, or whatever. So yeah, I think when you show interest in what people are doing, they're quite willing often to say, hey, yeah, do you want to come have a look? Do you want to come help? Do you want to chat about it? And I think that can happen locally as well as being out and about. So it's just, yeah, I think it involves that slower pace of life of having that time, taking that time to kind of make those connections. And Alice, the lookup thing I love. So I need to find out more about that.
Actually, that like our daughter is really into horses, and that's what she is passionate about, and that's kind of what she's focused on at the moment. But over the years, you know, we haven't been in one place to have our own horse, and we probably financially wouldn't have been able to. But we've always managed to find, exactly like you say, by just going to stay with people with horses, asking, can she come and help? You know, a place that we spend a lot of time in the UK, you know, she's looked after their ponies there and the sheep and everything on and off over the years, because she just kind of said, can I help? You know, the place where she's training now, she wrote them a letter telling them, you know, about her experience with horses, and she just wanted to come and observe, and that's turned into what she's doing now. So I think you're absolutely right. You have to just ask people, the opportunities are there, and then you end up, you know, being making it more affordable as well. If that's, you know, something like horses can be really expensive, especially in the UK. I don't know what it's like for you, but here it can be a very expensive hobby. But I think that people are really open if you ask and communicate, and that's how we've done everything, you know, is exchange of skills, just asking. And yeah, so I think that's a really interesting point.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful, actually, for home educating families specifically to hear about or be reminded of, because there is a lot of, especially when you like get into home educating and you're excited and you want to do all those things, right? All the events. And now you can see what other home educating families are doing on their field trip days and all of these things. And then there's these places that offer these cool opportunities, tours or demonstrations and different things to kind of say, hey, we're here. We know home educating families might be interested. So we've kind of put this package thing together. So not a bad thing, but kind of just looking at it the way you're talking about it, like looking about it in a different way, that you don't have to always go that route. And a lot of home educating families feel that that's not overly accessible for them for multiple reasons, not just financial reasons. So I think that's really good to hear that, because it can feel isolating and that you're limited in what you can do when you're home educating, but really it's, and so much of what I've heard throughout this conversation is like the connecting with others, the being in community. It doesn't have to be this like, and I can't think of the best way to describe it, but like this structure, like, I don't know, like traditionally, like we often live like as a family and you have kids, and whether you send your kids to school or not, but definitely if you said, you know, you send them to school and you sign them up for all the experiences, right? You sign up for the structured program, like that's what I'm kind of thinking about. Oh, my child's interested in playing the drums, sign them up for drum lessons. Like, it doesn't always have to be like, that's not the only way, you know. You don't have to sign up and spend hundreds of dollars and do it the way they lay it out. Like, there are these other like avenues or paths to get those experiences, but to meet those needs and to have those interests. And I think, like Erin, like what you described, like it can often be a better experience because it's more so what you're interested in, like, and what, like, it would meet your needs because you've just communicated, like what you were saying, just kind of don't be afraid to reach out and connect. And I've heard other adults talk about their home. I'm thinking Robin from the Honey I'm Homeschooling podcast. She's talked about her, I think it was her son, maybe I'm getting this wrong, but I've heard other families, I know she's talked about like encouraging our home educating kids and teens to make those connections for themselves. Like, so we do it when they're younger, we model it, but also, you know, send that email. I know I've heard of someone else talk about this too, like encouraging young people and adolescents, especially if they're interested in something, well, have you reached out to somebody in that field, right? And Erin, I know you've talked about like mentorship and stuff before too. So for me, it's a very good reminder. And then I think for people who are really new to home educating, just to think about it differently, that you can, you know, it's great to sign up for those things. That's fine too, but there are other options out there as well. So thank you for sharing those.
Yeah. No, I think that you've just rounded that up beautifully. Yeah, I agree totally. Those options are there, and, you know, don't be afraid to reach out and try and access them. And when you actually brought in the whole idea that we've talked a lot about connection and communication, that's just so important to me, because I think that is what life is about. It's about reaching out. It's about connecting and communicating. And I think that when you do reach out and connect and ask something, most people are going to be really happy to help you, or, you know, to share something with you. We might go, oh no, you know, we don't want to do that because they're not going to want to share, but actually I think most people are quite happy and thrilled to share things. So yeah.
And while we're on the topic of connecting, Alice, it'd be really lovely if you could let our listeners know how they can connect with you. Where are the best places to find you online?
So you can visit my website, which is www.alicegriffin.co.uk, and I'm Wandering Alice Griffin on Instagram, and I think it's the same on Facebook. But if you go to my main website, you will find all the links. And I love to connect. So I love it if people like you, Hayley, reply to my newsletter. If you go to my website, you can sign up for my newsletter. And like you replied to my newsletter, I love to connect with people and look at where our connection has led. So, yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend that people sign up for your newsletter. It's lovely. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming to talk to us today, Alice. It's been really lovely and so interesting. We're really grateful that you came to talk to us. Thank you.
I'm very grateful that you asked me. So thank you, all of you. Thanks.
Oh, and thank you to everybody for listening. And we'll see you again soon. So bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.
And this ends our conversation today. We hope you found it interesting and helpful. If you'd like to connect further or see additional content, Erin can be found on the web and on Instagram at Everlearning. Ashley can be found on Instagram at Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shells. And I, Hayley, can be found on the web and on Instagram at Taking a Kinder Path. We'd love it if you'd share this conversation with anyone you think might like it. And if you've enjoyed this episode, maybe you'd consider leaving us a review. We'd love to hear your thoughts. We're so grateful you made time in your day to listen to us chat. Thanks so much for listening.